Welcome to KiteLine, a weekly radio program on WFHB that focuses on issues in Indiana's prison system and beyond.
I'm Emma Johnson.
And I'm Mia Beach.
And we're your hosts for this program.
Behind the prison walls, a message is called a kite. Whispered words, a note passed hand to hand, a request submitted to the guards for medical care. Illicit or not, sending a kite means trusting that other people will bear it farther along until it reaches its destination. Here in KiteLine, we hope to share these messages with you. Across the prison walls. Yeah. According to a press release from the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, on October 21st, 2016, Robert Earl Council, aka Kinetic Justice Amun, went on a hunger strike based on threats against his life from the Alabama Department of Corrections Administration and staff. He was transferred to a supermax facility, and water was shut off in his cell in an effort to force him out of his hunger strike. His transfers happened after the media exposed the ADOC during a nationwide prison strike to demand changes to prison conditions and unpaid labor. As of November 8, 2016, Kinetic Justice is in danger for his life, and organizers are calling for action. Kinetic has been inside for over 22 years and is a co-founder of the Free Alabama Movement, which has organized successful work stoppages to demand basic human rights and has provided education and legal support to hundreds of incarcerated people. You can call the Alabama Department of Corrections and Alabama Governor Robert Bentley's office demanding first, that Kinetic Justice be transferred from Limestone Correctional Facility, and second, that Pastor Kenneth Glasgow of the Ordinary People Society be allowed to visit him and assess his condition immediately. You can call the Alabama Department of Corrections at 334-353-3883 or Governor Robert Bentley at 334-242-7100. For more information, visit freealabamamovement.wordpress.com or theordinarypeoplesociety.org.
Right after Donald Trump became president-elect, stock prices soared for the nation's two largest private prison companies. The larger of the two, CoreCivic, formerly known as Corrections Corporation of America, had its stock rise over 58%. For the smaller company, GEO Group, the stocks increased by over 28%. The private prison industry's stock fell sharply after the Obama administration announced in August that it planned to phase out the use of private prisons by the Bureau of Prisons. A report by the Justice Department's Officer of the Inspector General had found that private prisons had more security problems than government-run institutions and didn't necessarily cost less. Also during August, the Department of Homeland Security recommended that Immigration and Customs Enforcement reconsider its use of private prisons, which hold some two-thirds of beds for detained immigrants. However, before the election, CoreCivic announced that a rise in undocumented immigrants was causing its business to increase.
Demonstrations, blockades, and riots spread across the U.S. in the wake of Trump's victory on Tuesday night. According to a prisoner using a smuggled cell phone in South Carolina, tensions soared inside the prisons as well. He tweeted, quote, "Wow, prisoners beating on doors asking black guards how they're working for a racist president. Things have started," unquote.
This episode is the first part in a series we're curating on the impact of prison on families. We start off with a contribution from Lucy, who writes us about some of the trends that she's seen while researching family and prison dynamics. Recently, Lucy's been doing some interviews with people whose families have been affected by incarceration. You'll hear some of those interviews in later weeks, but right now, here's Lucy.
Very frequently, the effects of prison on the families, and especially the children, of incarcerated people are overlooked within public discourse and policy. Not only can incarceration affect the personal growth and development of family members, it can also have profound social and financial implications. Studies have shown that families contribute to both greater success after release and a dramatically lessened rate of recidivism. This is especially true for men and women who assume parental and spousal duties before and after release. However, many families still undergo financial difficulties as a result of parental incarceration. First, there are the face value costs of prison. Legal fees and fines plague the first few months of the trial and entry process. Then there are the costs of maintaining the household, very frequently coupled with the loss of income from an incarcerated parent who had formerly contributed. There are further difficulties here. Some people may have to take on additional hours or pass on educational and job opportunities when trying to support a family member. Some family members may need to stop working to assume full responsibility of children, which results in further income losses. Finally, there are the hidden costs of maintaining contact with a family member who has been incarcerated. Visits alone can place a significant financial strain on families, particularly if a loved one has been incarcerated in a distant location. The price of gas, a bus ticket, or a day off work to visit a family member adds up. In the same way, phone calls, emails, and packages rack up unbelievable costs. Depending on the prison, a weekly 30-minute phone call could contribute to monthly costs of over $120. The financial dimensions of this issue are staggering, but a whole host of other concerns are presented to incarcerated people and their families. Many of these issues uniquely affect the children involved. Some parents may choose to never see their children, while others are not given the choice. Parents in prison have attested that communication with their children is often limited, whether by other family members, conflict, or limited funds. No research shows that prohibiting communication between children and incarcerated parents would result in positive change. In fact, studies indicate that communication and contact result in positive growth, while negative effects result from absence of parents and family disruption. However, this issue is unfortunately overlooked very frequently, and the contact between children and their parents is exceptionally limited. According to studies, incarcerated parents cite separation from their children as one of the most difficult aspects of imprisonment, and are anxious about what is happening to their children during their absence. Incarceration also profoundly affects couples and the dynamic of relationships. Loneliness and missing each other on top of financial worries and concerns about criminal activity or social stigma are common. These difficulties in adjusting can lead to depression and mental health problems among both prisoners and their families. Prisoners' children and families must also deal with feelings of shame, guilt, and even social stigma. Family members may be the objects of hostility in their communities, jobs, or schools. These issues should not be left to the discretion of prison administrators. They are public concerns of enormous importance to all communities and should be combated as such.
Up next, I have some insights from Wendy, who started an organization that provides, among other things, baby showers for pregnant women in the Indiana Women's Prison.
I am Wendy Middleton, the founder and director of Angel's Wings, also adjunct faculty at the University of Indianapolis teaching sociology in the family. I was working for an organization called Prison Fellowship Ministries and got a call from a volunteer coordinator down in the Evansville area who had a young lady in the Vandenberg County Jail who was pregnant, and she was scheduled to deliver. She was young, and all pregnant intakes are shipped up, and they're housed at the Indiana Women's Prison here in Indianapolis. So she was going to be sent up here. She had no family support and was nervous and scared about her delivery. Also, because of the Adoption and Safe Families Act of 1997, she stood a good chance of her parental rights being terminated. So the volunteer coordinator said, do you know of any organization that would be willing to keep this baby for this mother? Because she had a five-year sentence, served 2.5, I think, or 3. And so I got on the phone. I tried calling a lot of people and couldn't find an organization that would take her baby temporarily without it going through the foster care system. And the problem with that, if the baby goes in the foster care system, then the Adoption and Safe Families Act of 1997, supersedes all, so she would stand a chance of losing her baby. So I talked to my husband, and we decided to be the temporary guardians for her baby once it was born. And it all just proceeded from there. She was transported up to the Indiana Women's Prison. I took myself off the volunteer list and got on her personal visitation list, and we visited every week. Through that experience, I thought a lot about the fact that she was not going to be able to have a baby shower. Babies at that point were born at Wishart Hospital, downtown Indianapolis, and they were not allowed to have anyone in the delivery room with them. You know, I had two boys at that time, thought about my own situation and how I had their diaper bag packed and all of that stuff before actually going to the hospital, and realized that she was not going to be able to experience that, but more importantly, that this baby was going to be coming into the world under such, you know, with mom's leg being shackled to the bed and all of that, and it just spoke to me. So that office of Prison Fellowship ended up closing, and I took a job at the University of Indianapolis and was talking to some of my coworkers about the experience, and I had petitioned the superintendent of the Indiana Women's Prison at the time and the commissioner to be allowed to go in the delivery room with an offender, and was finally, it took several months, but finally they approved that, and they said it was the first time in 40 years that somebody was going to be able to go in as a support person to an offender while they were in labor. So I was actually there. They called me when her name was Casey. When Casey went into labor, they called me, and I went to the hospital and met her there and was able to be in there for the delivery and the birth of her daughter that she named Angel. I picked Angel up from the hospital 24 hours later, and she was still wearing her little hospital underwear and, you know, didn't have an outfit. So I brought a new outfit to put on her. And just through that whole experience, I learned a lot about what a pregnant woman goes through and what the newborn goes through. And so I was inspired to start an organization where we began by having in-prison baby showers. We do 2 to 3 baby showers a year inside the Indiana Women's Prison. And we have about 25 to 30 women at each shower. And at that baby shower, we give them a diaper bag with a new outfit that they can take to the hospital, put on their baby, so they can have this experience with their baby. Now, this was before the Wee Ones nursery opened at the Indiana Women's Prison. So they could take this diaper bag, and the diaper bag would go home with the caregiver. So we started off just doing the in-prison baby showers, and then that led into other things.
So I asked Wendy to speak a little bit about what the Adoption and Safe Families Act actually ended up meaning for families in prison.
It is put into effect, from what I understand, in 1997 as a way to reduce the number of kids that are in foster care and place them in permanent homes. From a foster care standpoint, you know, I can see that that would be a great thing to put somebody in a permanent home. But at that time, the judge in this county was terminating the rights of the offender mothers, sometimes like within 6 months, because they obviously weren't able to comply with some of the stipulations that are put on a child when they're in CPS. So there were women who were giving birth and then, you know, their rights were being terminated without any due process. It's meant to reduce the number of kids in foster care, put them in permanent homes. It just does not work out that great for women who are incarcerated because it's very hard. You have no control over things like visitation. And even if you haven't done anything to abuse or neglect your child, you could end up losing your rights. And sometimes those are for, you could get a couple years for a minor charge, maybe a small theft, check deception, something, prostitution, and you lose your kids. So it's not fair to the kids, really. Even if you have, you know, a certain way that you view the mother and, you know, well, she shouldn't have broken the law. I've heard that a million times. If you take that completely out of your head and you think about that child does not deserve to lose their parent permanently. That these kids are 6 times more likely to be, you know, involved in the criminal justice system. Our main focus, our main mission with Angel's Wings is to promote family preservation. Everything that we do always goes back to that one thing. So we have volunteers who do casework management, like a reentry case management, and they come into the prison once a month and meet with mothers who either recently delivered a baby or they are pregnant, but they're getting ready to go home, because it's difficult enough for a man who's getting out of prison to make it and be successful, get back up on his feet. And then it's even more difficult for a woman then you add a woman with children, you know, you usually have a caregiver who's been caring for those kids, and they're like, you know, when you come home, here's your kids, I'm done. But then you add a woman who has a newborn, they have so many odds stacked against them. So we have reentry volunteers who come in and work with them, whether it's referring them to maybe where they can get a bus pass or a church that has a clothing pantry or, you know, meet some of their physical needs, help refer them to housing. This past year, we coordinated 2 days where the women who are involved in the Family Preservation Program, this means they have gone through parenting classes or prenatal classes, they've graduated, they haven't had any in-prison conduct reports. They get to participate in this program where they get to spend up to 4 hours a month in what we call the Children's Center, and it's in the chapel basement. It's on grounds, a maximum security prison, and they get to go down there, and it looks like a living room daycare kind of environment, and they get to lay on the couch and watch a movie or play the Wii, or they get to make snacks for their kids. We take nachos and cheese. They can warm them up in the microwave. Everything. We've wrote a grant to get the playscape donated out front of the chapel so we could take the kids outside to play. So we have the camp. We have Christmas programs. Right now I'm in the middle of doing what we call Tiny Teddy's Christmas. I see that the book bag program, the Mother's Day luncheon, there's so many different events that we coordinate inside the facility that are all geared towards family preservation. And then the facility itself houses one of only 9 in-prison nurseries in the country. It's called We Ones Nursery. And we have a capacity for up to 10 women who come in the facility pregnant if they have a sentence less than 30 months and they are going to be able to be released with their baby. They can actually, if they qualify, they can't have any violent offenses or child endangerment or anything like that. So if they qualify for the program, they can go into the We Ones Nursery program where after they deliver their baby, the baby can come back here to the prison. And we actually have babies that live inside a maximum security facility. First of all, when a woman comes in pregnant, she has other options. We have to give them all of their available options as far as infant placement. And we have other organizations besides Angel's Wings that would actually care for the babies for them and that kind of thing. So we offer them those options. But if they don't qualify for We Ones, you know, they've got to go with a backup caregiver or something like that. If We Ones is full, it would be the same thing. Sometimes the coordinator of the program over there, she will put a pregnant woman on the North Hall, which usually houses regular, you know, just general population offenders. She will move a pregnant person over there, and they will, because we know we'll have a bed opening up before she delivers. So we only have the capacity for 10 babies at a time, because they have single rooms with a bed for the mom and a crib for the baby. So there's only 10 of those. So sometimes we shuffle people around because, that they might be due. But it's a very good program, and it's housed in the way the Indiana Women's Prison campus is set up is by what they call cottages or units. And there are, 4 or 5 cottages. And then there's a big building, and a baby dorm is in one of the cottages that houses, there's a total of 40 offenders on the unit, and all the offenders on the unit have to meet that same criteria, not the 30-month criteria of being pregnant, but they have to have no violent history, no, you know, child endangerment, so that the environment is safe for the babies. And there's a fenced-in area behind it where we have a swing set and a place for the babies to be able to go out, their moms to be able to take them outside to play. There are offender nannies on the unit, and that's their paid job here in the prison is to be a nanny while the mom goes to maybe GED or culinary or cosmetology, whatever class they might be taking at the time. But it's a separate unit. But it is a unit in the facility. There's a case manager. There's an officer always there. We coordinate all the donations and the supplies because the babies are not paid for by the state. They are paid for by volunteer donations. I'm always on the lookout for baby supplies, people to donate gift cards. We do have the baby signed up for WIC, so they do get supplemental food and breastfeeding supplies, but that obviously doesn't last for a whole month. It's just a supplement, so we are always looking for donations of diapers and wipes and food to supplement WIC. Angels Wings also supports Wee Ones, coordinate all their milestones. So, for instance, we just had what we call Baby's First Halloween, and we have a big tote of baby costumes, and we take them back there. We give every lady on the unit some hot cider, a treat of some sort, and then we pretty much just let the moms have a heyday with the camera. They take pictures of the babies in costumes, different costumes, and then Angels Wings will print the pictures, which is a pretty big deal around here. We'll print the pictures for them and for their baby books. The same with the baby showers. We always let them take a pregnant picture so that can be their first picture in their baby books, just like if they were at home. It's a pro-social activity that we can encourage them to participate in, just like if they were home. Right now, women make up about 7% of the state's prison population, 6% of the federal prison population. But our average daily population here at the Indiana Women's Prison in October was 598. And out of those roughly 600 offenders, 150 of them have a release date or a sentence of less than 6 months. So 25% of our population is going to be going home within the next 6 months. And that includes the women with babies and then the women who, you know, the 200 or 300 women who participate in our family preservation program, they will be going home to kids. So reentry is very, very important. So one of our goals is to expand what we do with the reentry case management and be involved in any way that we can, maybe collaborating with other community organizations. I'm also involved in some conversations and some meetings right now about maybe redesigning or changing the criteria for our Wee Ones nursery. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but at least, you know, there's some forward thinking there. But Angels Wings also has a goal to become a licensed child placement agency with the state of Indiana so that the foster parents that we have, the people who are willing to temporarily keep a child while a woman is locked up, can also be licensed foster care. It's just they would only get their children from Angels Wings. And then there might be a situation where you have, you know, a woman who maybe her choice would be adoption. So we would be a low-cost or basically a really low-cost, since we're a nonprofit, adoption service for them to be able to facilitate that adoption privately without going through a big attorney, things like that. State of Indiana granted a contract to Angels Wings to provide a family services director here at the facility, which is the role that I'm currently filling, and that contract is up on November the 14th. So our immediate need right now is funding to continue to provide a full-time staff person at the prison to facilitate all of the events that I mentioned before, to facilitate, you know, all the donations and the writing small grants here and there to get different equipment and stuff like that, just to really be that person to advocate, to coordinate the WIC program, to coordinate all the prenatal and parenting classes. The list goes on and on. But if funding is not available to renew that contract, then Angels Wings was not going to be able to provide a full-time staff person because there's no more money left in the grant. We were funded by a Second Chance Act grant. So that's right now is our most pressing need, is seeking funding for this full-time staff person. Statistics show that the women, when they are arrested, the majority of them are the primary caregivers for their children. So there's an immediate impact on the family. You know, you've got a caregiver involved, a child involved, and a mom involved. And, you know, the mom can't just step out, for instance, and take control over a child that she hasn't been in their life, basically, for the last 2 or 3 years. So there's a lot of conflict and transition during that time. There's been a couple of times where I have facilitated the moms being a part of their parent-teacher conferences via the telephone, and that's a program I would like to expand because, you know, a lot of these moms, again, they're not in here for putting their child in any type harming their child, and they still would like to listen and be a part of, and that's important to the child, too, very important. If mom is even on the phone during a parent-teacher conference or a case conference, and, you know, if their kid has an individual education plan, being involved in that, So those are some of the things that I think are different. Not that the fathers or the men don't face those same challenges, but it's on a much larger scale here. But yet the same visiting guidelines that are used in the men's facility are used here. And I find that a constant challenge, because when you come here, you have 30 days to add your kids to your visiting list. And sometimes that is very difficult, especially if you don't have a family that has money to put on the phone for you to call home. It's very expensive to talk to your kids over the phone. Let's face it, you know, the majority of these women are coming from situations where they're already, you know, living in poverty. So there's so many different barriers there, you know, for these women to keep in touch with their kids and keep a somewhat healthy relationship. I mean, a parent is a parent, whether you're male or female, but I think the difference is that the women, for the most part, were the primary caregiver. And it's devastating when a mother goes to prison or a parent goes to prison. Psychologists equate that to the death of the parent, because you have to go through all of those same emotions, the mourning, the anger, the separation anxiety, all of that. But these kids are my heart, so they are the most important to me. So any way I can figure out to plug the kids into their mom's lives more often here in the facility, I do that. My sister ended up having an opiate addiction and ended up going to prison. And she has three kids, and two of her kids I have pretty much raised. That is exactly the type of family that I work with every day here at IWP.
After our talk, I reached out to Wendy's sister, April, who started House of Hope after her time in prison. We'd originally planned on featuring both women in this episode, but they had enough pertinent and moving things to say that we're giving each one her own feature. So next week, April talks about her story, her experiences in prison and its impact on her family, and tells us about House of Hope, which is located in Martinsville. To help with Wendy's organization, Angel's Wings, you can visit angelswingsinc.org. In upcoming episodes, we'll discuss the impact of prison on families with many other people, from the conditions of pregnant prisoners to a father and daughter who spent time in the run from the law to an adult child of a prisoner currently serving decades in prison. This has been KiteLine. Anyone affected by the prison system in any form is welcome to write us via our P.O. Box, KiteLine Radio, P.O. Box 2422, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. KiteLine wants your feedback. You can reach us via email at kitelineradio@gmail.com or find us on Facebook. Are you or someone you care about affected by the prison system? You can call us to record a message or share a story to be played on the air at 812-269-2517. Or you can use this number to record a message to a loved one. You can find previous episodes of KiteLine or more information on our stories at kitelineradio.noblogs.org. KiteLine is intended as a means of communication between people across the prison walls. We are not responsible for all views expressed on the program. WFHB, its contributors, or any affiliates airing this program are not responsible for the views expressed on the show. This has been KiteLine. Join us every Friday at 5:30 p.m. to hear more stories, news, and insights about Indiana's prison system and its impact on our communities. Thank you for listening.